This is a podcast from BBC Radio's news and sports station,
5Live.
To find out more about 5Live and its sister service, 5Live Sports Extra, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.
We have some movies to discuss. Mark is here, and let's do this. From Lindsay Orchard in Bath.
Okay. Not in the bath.
No, in Bath. Dear Dr. Quinn and the medicine woman,
thank you.
At the risk of changing the usually acerbic tone of the film review, I just wanted to write on the chance that you might wish my boyfriend Leon a happy second anniversary from me today. During the first year of our courtship, we lived 2.5 hours apart and listened to the download of your film review, and it became a ritual of our Sunday nights to stave off the reality of one of us having to make an imminent departure for the motorway. Earlier this year, Leon happily moved to Bath, for which I was, which I'll always be grateful, and we still listen to the film review together every week. So could you just say quick happy anniversary from Lindsay to Leon. Neither an assassin nor a pig farmer be.
Could we say happy anniversary, particularly since for the first few years of my marriage, my wife and I lived in different towns that were 2.5 hours apart, and I know exactly what that Sunday night feeling feels like, so congratulations to both of you.
Before we get to the box office top 10, have you seen
No, and here's the worst thing. This is now following me around, right? I was in BAFTA doing something, and...
should be thrown out of BAFTA.
No.
You should, because is going to be one of the biggest
award-laden
films.
I want to be clear.
Queued up or paid or anything.
Okay, I do have an excuse, so I have an exeat, right? I have been attempting to keep up with the stuff which is coming out.
Have you?
Yes, and unfortunately there hasn't been any let up in that. And the other thing is, and I've got to confess this, because I know the awards season is coming up, because I know it's going to be a big awards thing. I'm kind of already waiting for the screening, which is going to be put on as the awards screening, which I know there will be.
But dismal.
I know. I've got nothing against the film. I'm sure when I see it, it's going to be fabulous, and I know I am going to see it. But I haven't gone out. I have been keeping up. But people are now berating me in the street.
It's the number one source of
correspondence. Have you yet seen An Education?
It's the number one source of correspondence. 2012? No. Is it Men Who Stare at Goats? No. Is it Paranormal? Is it Twiglet? It's not. It's Has Mark Seen An Education?
I know. I tell you, a terrible thought occurred to me as I was coming in on the train today. A little voice in the back of my mind.
Just say yes.
Have you seen Animal House? You know, the angel appears on one shoulder and the little devil appears on the other one. And the devil appears and then went, lie. And then the angel went, no, thou shalt not review films thou hast not seen. Lie. Everyone thinks
does
it's great.
Does the angel
great.
Speak
lie.
In the voice of Eddie Izzard?
It does, yes. I saw Eddie Izzard at Bournemouth. He was fantastic. I went to see him doing his new concert thing. It was fantastic. I laughed so much that during the second half, I almost wanted to stand up and shout, please stop, because I am now really hurting.
Tony Austin in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. Dear Cut and Slash, Simon, could you please continue to put pressure on the good
Mark
doctor
to see
and review
an
Education?
I know. Really? You don't need me to review it. Everyone loves
really,
it.
There can be no good excuse for his tardiness in this matter. I live at the end of the world, also known as Victoria, British Columbia, and even I managed to harness up the sled dogs and venture out to see it. Dear doctor, cast your bleary eyes upon this cinematic feast and let me know if I enjoyed it or not.
Yeah, I don't know. But you saw it, right?
Absolutely.
And?
Oh, very good.
You loved it.
I thought it was very good.
I don't even understand the joke about the politician that the man looks like. I mean, I know the joke, and when I see it, I'm going to go, it's Ed Balls. And then it's all going to make sense.
Well, I teed that up knowing that you would obviously be part of the joke, but now it's just everybody else is
everybody
part of the joke
else.
Apart from you.
It's like, but I tell you what, the interesting thing is, this is kind of like, you know, it's like the Alice through the Looking Glass. Usually, I've seen a film and a bunch of other people. Now, I'm walking around. Has everyone in the country seen the film now?
Yes.
How come it isn't number one in the box office charts?
Absolutely.
Everyone, have you seen An Education?
No.
Thank you.
Louise is just pretending to make you feel good.
Yeah, you have.
Earlier.
No, I'm
earlier.
Not. I won't pretend.
Did you love it?
I haven't seen
you
it.
Earlier,
she
was
really
telling
haven't.
Me how good it was.
It's true. I am going to see it.
Jim Robinson, BA Applied Romans.
BA Applied Romans?
That's what it says. Anyway. Dear Ben and Her, I thought An Education was excellent. Well written, well performed, the steady flow of gags injected just enough charm into an increasingly sinister plot to make the inevitable tragic twist all the more powerful. I think he's been to see another film. Best of all, however, it allowed me to make possibly my funniest joke to date. Walking into the Oxford Picture House with my friend, I approached the kiosk and quipped, "Two students for An Education, please." They're still laughing about that one. So I think that's quite good, actually, because this follows on from the Saw 6.
Yeah, I'd like to see Saw 6.
Any other entertaining things that you can say as you go in and buy the tickets for a particular film?
Are we broadening this out to any movie?
Well, Two Students for an Education is okay.
Two Students for an Education is good, yeah.
And seeing Saw 6 is always also quite fun. So if there's anything else that occurs to you that would be great fun to make the hard-working people in the office kiosk, just make their day go with a merry
put a spring in their step.
Yes. So they could wear that hat
yes.
at a jaunty
end. Do you think that now the people selling the tickets for Saw 6 have heard, I'd like to see Saw 6 so many times that they actually want to thump people when
almost,
they're doing
that? Almost
certainly.
Almost certainly.
Even when I did it on the day that it opened.
We'll do you a box office top 10. Oh, no, see, I can't be quick about it because there's so many... Well, there's a lot about Twilight. There's a lot about 2012. We'll keep all the rest of it very brief. Box office top 10 out of 10. The Informant...
Which is the film which I had to see the poster to realise just how much of a screwball comedy it was meant to be. The biggest problem with it is that it's not Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, and I think it is a sort of soft-peddling job for both Soderbergh and perhaps the writers. The only thing to be said in its favour is that Matt Damon, about whom I have, you know, we all make the Matt Damon joke from Team America, is actually very decent in it. It's just not a great film.
At number 9, it's The Fourth Kind.
Which, obviously, this is going to come up because of Paranormal Activity. The Fourth Kind is the movie that is out in cinemas at the moment, which is pretending to be real. The idea is that Mila Jovovich comes on at the beginning and says, look, what you're going to see in this film is me reenacting scenes that really happened. And to show you how much they really happened, we're going to have this video footage of the thing that really happened with the scenes of me reenacting it. So apparently some people in the cinema go, oh, what? It really happened? Which is amazing, because the stuff that happens on video just looks like a bunch of people acting, but on video, which is essentially, the problem with the film is that it's not that they've all been abducted by aliens, it's that none of them are doing a very good job of pretending to be real, you know, news footage stuff.
A Serious Man is at number 8. This from Mark,
yeah.
Who says, Dear Inglorious, and the other one, I have been a big fan of your reviews for years now, and although I don't let your comments lead me into choosing a film to watch, I can normally understand your point of view.
There's a but coming here.
However, I'm sorry, Mr. Kermode, but what were you thinking after viewing A Serious Man when you said that it might be regarded as a classic? I am a big fan of the Coens. I was asleep after 20 minutes, and when I awoke 10 minutes later, I was really tempted to leave, but I thought, no, this is the Coens. It must get better, surely, but it didn't. Not only is this the worst Coen brothers movie, but one of the worst I have ever seen. I've Done Nothing, I think, was the forgettable theme, but the film was boring, self-indulgent pants.
Okay, I don't remember using that phrase, although if you quote it, I'm sure I did. What I was attempting to say, and what I'll say again, is when I saw it, I really liked it, but I thought it's one of the films that they've made for themselves after having the huge Oscar-winning success of No Country and the box office success of Burn After Reading, which, you know, as we all know, was just a guest list of a movie. It was like they'd gone back and made a film for themselves. I thought, I really like this, but it's going to have a very limited audience. What then surprised me was the fact that it then opened amidst this absolute welter of five-star reviews with people saying film of the year and the best film of their career. I like the film. I don't think it's the best thing they've ever done. I still think that's Barton Fink. It's definitely in the top end of the stuff they've done. The worst stuff they've done is the self-indulgent stuff. Incidentally, the other thing I have backing up that I have to go and see again is Big Lebowski. I like the film very, very much. The only thing that surprised me was just how much everybody else likes it. In fact, that response is much closer to what I thought everyone else's response would be. I suspected that I would see it and like it and enjoy it, but most people would respond. What was the gentleman's name?
It was Mark Woodruff.
It was in the manner of Mark Woodruff. What surprises me is that Mark Woodruff, as far as I can tell, is in the minority. And that surprised me as much as anybody.
An email that takes in that film at number 8, Serious Man, and also the number 7 film, The Men Who Stare at Goats. This is from Ben Shreves. Very long email, but just a few brief points from it. Dear Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Marshak. So my fellow cineast Nick and I went to see A Serious Man this week and both thoroughly enjoyed the darkly comedic sensibility underlying this genuinely interesting insight into a Jewish community in the Midwest. A Serious Man is the worthy successor to the brilliant No Country for Old Men that Burn After Reading didn't manage to be. Although Burn After Reading was poor by Coen standards, it was considerably better than the much overrated, yes by you, Mark, The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Oh, no. No.
The main problem with the film, as Simon pointed out, was that it implied, and in one case asserted, that the soldiers actually had psychic powers. The whole concept, surely, is that they think they have special powers but don't. That's why the true story it's based on is funny.
I don't think it does assert that. I think it just playfully raises that idea. Can I just ask you, is it just the end shot that gives you that impression? If that end shot hadn't have been there, there's nothing else in the film.
No, there is.
He bursts
clouds. He looks at clouds.
He doesn't
and the clouds,
burst clouds.
He looks at it, the clouds part, and the goat falls over when
But looking at clouds and seeing the clouds part, obviously there's an element of doubt. I mean, there is, you know, we're talking about faith and science, all the rest of it. People look at clouds and the clouds move. It doesn't mean they're moving the clouds. It means the clouds happen to be moving at the same time as they're looking at them. I think you're being far too literal.
Okay,
but quickly, Burn After Reading is all over the place and is look at all these famous people that we know. Men Who Stare at Goats isn't that. I mean, I think Men Who Stare at Goats isn't a perfect film, but it's certainly on the side of films that are, you know, inventive and trying to do something, rather than the side of Burn After Reading, which is just, you know, oh, we've got a bit of time, we've got a bunch of famous friends, let's knock around Georgetown.
Let's whiz through it. So, Fantastic Mr. Fox at 6.
I don't like
it. Five.
Him.
Harry Brown's at 4.
Oh, we really are whizzing.
We are, yes. Disney's Christmas Carol is at 3. 2012 is at number 2. Paul in Cardiff.
You and Jason Isaacs.
Oh, what have I done? I'm not sure I can afford the psychological readjustment sessions after my experience this afternoon. I have just returned from watching 2012. Why, oh, why did I not heed the last podcast review and listen to the good doctor's words of wisdom?
Thank you.
Dare I say it, words of salvation. I could have prevented the thing that was my brain from turning into what is now a mashed potato. I can only say this as I cling on to the life I once knew a few long hours ago, that if life as we know it, I know it's a suicide mission, but I must try to save humanity. How much time do we have before the Earth is destroyed, etc.?
25 minutes at one point.
Appear in any film from now on, I shall throw my own microwave down the nearest volcano, as per the main plot about the mutating neutrinos acting like a microwave at the Earth's core, and hope life can begin again and we rebuild humanity, because it will be long overdue if movies such as this continue to pollute our senses. This movie is prophetically self-reviewing. Huge cracks appear throughout the movie, like many of the implausible, stunningly dull and infantile scenes. By the end, I was hoping the actual screen itself would crack open and the movie would be swallowed up. And there's lots more. It's Parent Trap with earthquakes.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I thought that would improve 2012, other than somebody going through it with a chainsaw and taking out most of the main scenes, would be to have shown it in Feelorama, or in what was called Sensoround at some point. Because, you know, funnily enough, it's that kind of movie. It's the movie in which what's going on is so dull that the only thing that would make it better is something actually physically vibrating your insides.
The thing is, the only thing I would say is having expectations.
You went to see it, right?
I went to see it.
You went to see it.
Family expedition. Expectations.
Expedition.
Absolutely rock bottom. As a consequence, quite enjoyed it. I thought, you know, the CGI, when the Earth's core starts to collapse, you think, okay, that's quite... What's also quite interesting is the fact that it appears to be no one's fault. It's just one of those things. The microwave's gone down the volcano, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going, you know, we should change our ways.
Yeah,
you know,
but the worst thing about it is the cynicism of that. The cynicism of it, of let's make it no one's fault at all. Because you know what? There's probably a large demographic of people out there who've got money to spend, who, on the other hand, think that, you know, turning everything up to maximum and all this... So let's not annoy them. Let's not annoy anybody at all. Let's not do any of that finger pointing, because actually it might have a financial... Can I say instantly, there's an email's come in from an accountant. Have you got that?
Oh, I don't know.
An email that has come in from an accountant, which has said to me, which has said, honestly, Mark, you always you claim when things are bad, you blame accountants. You say it's like a film.
That's
which
true.
Which is no, and he said, accountants need love too. And you know what? It's absolutely very good point to blame the scriptwriter.
We'll come to that. The UK's number one is The Twilight Saga. It's New Moon. A whole bunch of stuff on this. James Dacey, BSc on psychology.
Can I say, even before you read it out, I've had so much abuse from, you know, middle-aged, middle-brow critics saying, I can't believe you like that film. Even people who I really like have really given me a
hard
time.
Here we go. Dear Dr. Furious and the Shoveler, after listening to your positive review of New Moon, I decided to treat my wife with a trip to the local multiplex for Satsuma Wednesday. Whilst I enjoyed the film, I found it was not without its faults, namely that the Bella character is totally devoid of any redeeming features. Even for a teenager, this girl is selfish beyond belief, and there was something about Robert Pattinson that I found irritating. It was only on our way back to the car that it clicked. For 90% of his screen time, Pattinson is pulling blue steel, the signature facial pose of Garrick Zoolander.
Right.
Does the good doctor feel that this was coincidental, or was the soulless and pained Zoolander a key reference point for the young Mr. Pattinson person when developing his character.
That is right. I mean, unfortunately, that is one of the things with this film, is, which isn't true of the first Twiglet thing, is that Pattinson is basically required to be the pasty-faced one whilst your other man runs around with a fantastic, you know, six-pack. And I did think that in the opening movement, actually for a large amount of the film, it was a bit of a hard thing for him to pull off, because it was, OK, stand over there and moodily ignore Bella, but just appear in a sort of vision looking like you've got that cure makeup. I do agree with that. I don't think that damages the film, but I do agree with that.
A couple of contrasting
views. It is Zoolander. It is Blue Steel.
Phil Morley saying, I'm a big fan of the podcast. Find it an ideal treat to listen to on the solemn trip to work on Monday morning. Whilst I don't always agree with Mark's reviews, he always has a valid point, blah, 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 blah. So what puzzles me is how he can not only defend but praise the Twilight films. They are truly a blot on culture.
The films, plural. Was films plural question mark? Did he say Twilight films?
Yes.
He's saying this is about both of them.
Yes, they are truly a blot on culture for the following reasons. Considering the amount of times I've heard the Good Doctor slate films for being misogynistic, I find it amazing that he supports a franchise in which its leading female character is essentially a dog on a leash for a male in his family. The franchise is almost Dogville 90210 in places. This, plus the dubious messages about chastity and ultimately Bella's torture during childbirth, see book 4, I think truly goes against a lot of the excellent comments that Dr. Comed has made about good female role models in other films.
Okay, haven't got to book 4, so don't know what that is. Sounds like a plot spoiler. Wish I hadn't heard it. As far as I don't understand that she's a dog on a leash for a fam.
I think it's just, you know, she's a bit useless without him. It's that kind of.
She's not a bit useless without him. She's not. It's that whole thing about whether or not, in order to be heroic, you have to be action heroic, or in order to be heroic, you have to be stoic. Actually, what she is somebody who, having fallen in love with something which is essentially unattainable, the love, defeats everything. She's not useless. I mean, I understand that she does a lot of moping in the first film, but you know what? It's heroic moping.
It is. Claire,
I'm going to mope now, and it's a year of it.
Claire Murray says, "Dear Kim and Aggie, even if the New Moon film is heavy on the abstinence theme, I would much rather."
What's wrong with that, incidentally? I'm sorry.
I would much rather see young girls get that message than any of the hyper-sexualized messages that prevail in films aimed at them.
With you on that.
Even in films where the message is a positive one, like Mean Girls, the imagery and language is, in my view, not a positive influence on girls. Hopefully, by saying abstinence is okay, many girls will feel confident to pursue relationships at their own pace. This can be really overdone, can't it? Because there's a whole different thing. You're saying, I notice you have a chaste relationship. Yes, because if he bites me, I'm going to turn into a vampire. It's not the kind of scenario that one would normally encounter.
No, but you're holding your hand.
I just want to do this very briefly. A long epistle from Victoria Jackman, who's a huge fan, but says, I enjoyed the first Twilight film, although as a lover of the books, what Catherine Hardwicke did to some of the original story was unforgivable. I had high hopes that Chris Weitz has done a much better job. I was not disappointed. I barely breathed for 2 hours and 10 minutes, reveling in the melodrama. Even though I knew what was going to happen in almost every scene, having read the book several times, I was still mesmerised by the whole thing. What Mark called unbelievably sulky is what we girls love so much about the books. I would call it heartbroken misery over the loss of the love of your life.
Yep.
The problem may be that Catherine Hardwicke missed out all the parts of the first book that demonstrated the depth of their relationship. That made it very difficult for non-book lovers to understand why Bella sinks into such deep depression. Anyway, so
no, I understand it's part of the whole allure of the Gothic romance, which is, of course, one of the areas in fiction in which female writers have particularly excelled. And may I just say, on the subject of the abstinence thing, firstly, reducing the whole Twiglet thing to it being about abstinence is incredibly reductive, and I don't like it. And the second thing is, you know, if there are so many movies out there that whose worldview is, you know, that everything must be sexualized right now, this minute, that it's really interesting that when something doesn't play ball with that, it gets called somehow sanctimonious and lecturing. I mean, I think the whole abstinence thing with Twiglet has been massively overcooked, but I have no problem whatsoever with a film that says, you know what, there are heroic things that this woman can be doing that do not fill in the blanks.
Involve tonsil hockey.
I don't think I've ever heard that phrase before.
Beverly says, stop waffling and get on with reviewing Paranormal because I have to leave soon. You'll just have to wait a couple more moments because some news and sport, and then it's Paranormal
You
activity.
Liked New Moon, though, didn't you?
I did like New Moon. See? Absolutely like New Moon. And I'm looking forward to the next one and film 4.
Good.
Where, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that sounds... Well, I don't know. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But yeah. Have you read the Twiglet books?
No. Okay. I thought they were only for 13-year-old
girls.
No,
wrong.
Wrong.
Absolutely
wrong.
Thank you. The people who borrow the books are always women at your age, Justin. On the entertaining things to say when you queue up at the box office, depending on what the movie is and depending what kind of mood you're in.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, this is Emily on the way to her cousin Holly's wedding. My dad, on entering the cinema with my mum, asked the girl behind the glass, "How long does love actually last?"
That's very good.
She's quite good.
That's very good.
It does depend on the movie, though. So, one of the most talked about films of the week is Paranormal Activity. Here we go.
So, in case you don't know, which would seem unlikely, so the story of Paranormal Activity is it is a videotaped recording, in inverted commas, of paranormal activity happening in a house inhabited by a young couple. At the beginning of the movie, we see the young couple in the house. The guy has got himself a new flashy video recorder, which he has got for the purpose of recording stuff which appears to be going on around his girlfriend. During the course of the movie, we see the videotapes that they make. In fact, essentially what we're meant to be doing is looking at the videotapes with no sort of interstitial stuff. It's just the record of what they've shot. And during the course of it, things start to happen. And I'm trying very hard here to not give away anything, because one of the pleasures of the film is not knowing very much. I mean, I don't know, you've probably seen the trailer in which you're seeing the audience more than anything else. Anyway, they are attempting to record what's going on in the house, and at some various points they call in a paranormal specialist. But crucially, between the central characters, there is tension and friction, which is, of course, at the heart of any disturbances. Here's a clip.
These lights have been flickering, these ones that are in the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
We've had water from the faucets turn on and off unexplainably.
Okay.
You know, or we'll come down, not turn on and off, but we'll come down and it'll be on. We've heard banging on the walls, scratching sounds, like dragging down the wall kind of scratches. I've heard whispering. Sometimes I can't understand it. Sometimes it's saying my name.
Oh, so it specifically calls to your name?
It has before.
You've heard this too, Mika?
Well, I've heard, like, weird noises. I haven't really heard anyone say Katie's name except for me. That might have been me in my sleep.
I can tell the difference between you saying Katie from over there in the bed and something right here whispering distinctly in my ear.
So, basically, as you can tell, it's docudrama or mockudrama or rockudrama, if you will. Now, the facts with which everyone is familiar, the film cost somewhere between $11,000 and $15,000 to shoot, was shot over the course of a couple of weeks. It has so far taken $106 million, therefore making it the most profitable independent film in terms of comparison of budget to profit. It also had the biggest opening weekend in America for a film playing in under 200 theatres. And as you will know from the responses which are used in the advertising campaign, several people have been completely wigged out by Paranormal Activity, not least James King, who is quoted on the poster. And I saw James in a cinema just after I'd seen the film, and I said, "Were you really as creeped out as you said you were on the poster?" Because the poster has got a quote from him which says something like, "You know, oh, it'll stay with you. Wasn't able to breathe. Really, you know, heart pounding. Blah 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 blah. People being carried out. Blah blah." And he said, "No, I was really, really disturbed by it." He said, "I haven't slept since then. I've been really upset. I was really..." I mean, he wasn't being funny. It was a really strange thing, because I sort of did... Usually when I see James, I just bound up to him like Tigger and I kind of insult him, because that's how our relationship works. And for the first time...
Sounds familiar.
I said, yeah, thank you. And for the first time, I said, "What on earth do you..." And he went... Well, I wasn't. He actually seemed genuinely quite cowed. Also, I've talked about this with my very good friend Nigel Floyd, who is a big horror fan, knows more about horror movies than I do, but who also thought the movie was genuinely unsettling and genuinely creepy and genuinely worrying. So, it is with all that in mind that I say the following things about it. The first thing is, it didn't scare me. Now, I don't say that like somebody saying, "Oh yeah, well, I'm above it, it didn't scare me." You know the thing about you go and see a horror movie, you take your girlfriend with you, you go and see Friday the 13th. Well, not now Friday the 13th, but in the old days, that's what you do. The idea was, oh, everybody shrieks, everybody ends up in each other's arms. That's one of the pleasures of horror movies. One of the pleasures for men is to go, "Yeah, it didn't scare me, it didn't scare me," which is actually not true, because most of the times you are scared, but you just say it didn't scare me. In the case of Paranormal Activity, I really wanted to be scared by it, and I have to confess not to having been scared by it. And the question of why I wasn't scared by it is troublesome, because I think there are things in the film that are clearly, clearly very, very well done and clearly, demonstrably are working on other audiences. The first thing is to do with the fact that it's shot in the mockudrama, docudrama tradition. Now, if you have a knowledge of all this stuff, which a lot of people do, you go back and look at movies like Cannibal Holocaust, which is meant to be found footage. That gives us then The Last Broadcast and, of course, famously The Blair Witch Project, which looked from the outside like it was just a found videotape of some people who had gone into the woods and the stuff that had happened to them
only seeing what's on the videotape. Then since then, we've had things like Series 7, The Contenders. Most recently, we've had, well, Cloverfield, which, of course, had the found video motif. And now, of course, In Cinemas, The Fourth Kind, which, you know, purports to have the found video motif. The thing with this is that because I don't ever believe that anything is real, if I'm told, you know, I'm shown documentary footage within a feature film, I don't believe it's real. And the film has to work really hard to get over that for me. In the case of Blair Witch, I did get over it, and I did find Blair Witch genuinely unsettling, and I enjoyed exactly what it was that other people enjoyed about that creepiness of it's like you're watching the real thing, which does date back to Cannibal Holocaust, and of course beyond that, back to Africa Radio and, you know, the documentary tradition. The problem with this was I never felt enough threatened by the realism of it, and I kind of wished that I had been one of those people who had seen it at a surprise late night screening or at a surprise screening when they were testing the movie out for the first time. Not just knowing nothing about it, but actually believing to some extent in the mythology of the film. I wish that I had that, because I remember that strange thing around the Blair Witch Project. There was a kind of frisson around it that you, maybe some bits of this are more real than you think they are. That's the first problem. The second problem is that there is a structure in the film which relies on very tiny events becoming more and more significant, and you have to be convinced by the eeriness and the power of the very tiny events in order to get you through the languors that happen in between. Now, that's a very structurally, that's perfectly fine. A tiny thing happens, like a door will move, and that then gives you essentially the creeping terror that will see you through the next 7 minutes until the next tiny thing happens. On the one hand, I applaud the filmmakers for their use of making the small significant. I mean, one of the clever things about the film is that the lock-off shot of the bedroom, which is the shot that we've all seen on the advert, you know, they put the camera on and it's filming them sleeping overnight, and in the trailer you see the lock-off shot and then something tiny happens, and then we cut to the audience going, well, I never did, and that was a problem for me.
You have got big hands, haven't you?
Yeah, thank you. You and, you know, and the thick of it. Are you in the slightest bit interested in what I'm saying about this film?
I was, but I was then distracted by your enormous
hands. By my enormous hands.
Kenny Everett size.
Well, nobody in the screening was distracted by my enormous hands, much as I think, you know, I would love to have been able to...
My hair was wafting in the breeze caused by your hands.
There were... Okay, see how I just carry on? There were a couple of moments in which I thought, okay, you're getting towards something now that is going to be... I mean, obviously, the frames of reference are very clear. Quite apart from the mockumentary tradition, there are whole sections of it that owe an awful lot to The Exorcist. And I don't say that just pat. I mean, the fact of the locked-off shot of the bedroom, the shot of the door. I mean, one of the posters for The Exorcist, when it first came out in 1973, was literally an image of a half-open door, which said, that's the door. And people thought that was absolutely terrifying. And clearly, the filmmaker is aware of his horror heritage. But in the back of my mind was this. If I wasn't a horror fan, if I was somebody who didn't watch horror movies, would I find this really scary? And what I think is, if you're not somebody who perennially goes to horror films, you will be scared by Paranormal Activity. It will do what it says on the tin. If you are somebody who regularly goes to horror films, you will have possibly the same problem that I had, which is, yep, I can see that, I can see that, I can admire that, I know where that's coming from, have seen this all before, you're doing it fine, but I'm not scared. However, to be completely honest with you, I know that Nigel Floyd, who knows about horror films and knows and has seen all those films I'm talking about, was creeped out. So it might still work for you on that level. So what I'm saying is I went in wanting to be scared. I came out understanding why some people were scared, but I'd be lying if I told you that I was scared, and that bothered me. What I really wanted to be was genuinely given that shiver, that chill, that sense of unease, that sense of the uncanny. And of course, inevitably, as the drama progresses, the sense of frustration around it becomes more so. So I think, I mean, it's amazing what they've done with tiny resources. It's a very, very good exercise. And if you've completely got everything stripped down, this is what you can achieve. And it demonstrably works with an audience. And like all breakthrough horror movies, Exorcist would be a case, Blair Witch would be a case, it is in the end finding its market with people who aren't horror fans. Huge horror hits are horror films that work with non-horror fans. And I can't deny that it's working with non-horror fans. But for me, I felt there was a level of unremarkability about it. And I wasn't scared.
Correspondent, I got that message. David Harrison saying, lucky enough to see Paranormal Activity without knowing anything about it.
Well, which is the best way.
By myself, in a huge American cinema. Didn't even know the name of the film. Had to check afterwards. What? How did you end up? What did you say when you queued up?
If it had been Disney's Christmas Carol.
Can I have one seat for screen one?
Krakatoa, East of Java. Is that one? I'll have that.
When I left the screen, My hands were shaking. Yeah, got hit by the full spookiness. My eyes filled with tears as I calmed down. It was Ace. Mm-hmm. Try not to ruin anything in the review.
Well, I did try.
You did very well.
I did try very hard.
It's all about the audio, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually, there is another problem there, which is that the audio is very, very important. But, of course, if you were making the tape that they make, I hate to make this point. Don't make it then.
If you're going to hate making it, just don't make it.
I'll do it and hate myself anyway. The subwoofer rumbling is so clearly a post-production device because you wouldn't get that on a record. So that I'm sorry, a part of me was going, that's a sound. You know, and actually, this would be more scary if you didn't do that.
Mike in London, dear Cushing and Lee, looking forward to hearing this Paranormal Activity review. I saw it at a screening a few weeks back, and despite being a seasoned horror fan, my pulse was still racing an hour after the film finished. Unfortunately, I think the film could become a victim of its own hype, as people will go along determined not to be scared and desperate to pick out its faults. It proves that certainly within the realms of horror, intelligent use of sound is 100 times more important and powerful than what we are seeing on screen, and good natural acting makes up for any lack of CGI and 3D. Martin on this text, watched Paranormal Activity last night. It's rubbish. Paul in Guildford saw Paranormal Activity, the Blair House Project. Wouldn't quite say the audience jumping out of the seat scenes from the trailer were replicated in my cinema. More teenagers giggling. How I wish it had been rated 18, just to sort out the wheat from the chav, and and rid us of this gaggle of talking, texting monstrosities. At one point, I turned to the five teenage girls behind me and said, "You know, Twilight's just starting next door." I thought it would shut them up, and it did, because they left. I pity the Twilight audience, but at least we got to see the rest of the film in peace. Fine film, by the way, and a lesson to all wannabe filmmakers: you can do it cheap and effective.
Can I read you very quickly the best review of the film, which is from the BBFC website about the 15 certificate? I'll be very quick, okay? It says, "The film features frequent strong threat and menace from the opening minutes until the final scenes, as the couple's camera records off-screen sounds and manifestations that graduate in frequency and intensity to the point where threat becomes tangible and physical. The film's handheld camera work lends the horror and intensity a greater sense of realism and immediacy, as the film's power is not reliant on gore or special effects, but instead credibly depicts an unknown force with growing power overwhelming the lives of a young couple in a realistic domestic setting." That's the censors. I mean, I'm sorry. I bet in America they don't have censors who write film reviews that solid.
So next time you're away, we just need to get a censor in.
You do. Ring the BBFC and get Sue Clark down here. She'll do it.
Dave's saying, "Can you stop encouraging people to make stupid puns at the kiosk?" As someone who used to work in a cinema and had a particularly hard summer when every person would ask, "Can I see the Queen?" "Oh, I can. I hope I'm dressed up enough. When does she arrive?"
Very good.
I could go on for a long time, so please stop.
That's marvellous.
It's 8 minutes to four. Gerard Butler's around.
This is law-abiding citizen! Yes, if it's Ian Paisley, it happens every time, isn't it? Sparta says no! So, Gerard Butler stars in Law Abiding Citizen. If you've seen the trailer, you've kind of seen the film. But here's the plot. Gerard Butler is a law-abiding citizen. Bad people break into his house and do hideous things to his family. The legal system makes a deal with one of them. I mean, they get caught. The legal system does a deal with them because, as Jamie Foxx says, hey, you know, that's the way of the world. So one of them gets out. Gerard Butler decides he's going to have to kill everyone. Don't take my word for it. Here's a clip.
"What do you want, Clyde? You at war with the whole world? It's not going to bring anybody back."
"No, I'm at war with this broken thing. This thing that brought you and I together."
"This broken thing works for people that are sane. You think doing what you're doing is going to change anything? You and whoever else you have helping you are going to pay."
"I don't think you have any idea who's helping me or what I'm doing.
It's a matter of time."
"So you see the bodies, you see the smoke, but the larger picture still eludes you?"
"Do tell."
"I would like to, but I would rather show you. I still have faith in you, so I'm going to give you one last chance. Here's the deal. Release me and drop all charges by 6 a.m. 6 a.m., Nick."
"Or what?"
"Or I kill everyone."
Because he's in jail, right? Okay. But you know that because
he's just a little bit cross.
He's a little bit cross. Now, a couple of things. First thing is, it would be very hard for any film to live up to the trailer for Law Abiding Citizen, which is basically the film. You know, the stuff happens. He's in jail. He says, "I'm going to kill everyone." He also gets to think about, it's going to be biblical. And then when Jamie Foxx says, "This has got to end," it's just starting. So all the zingers, all the things that people used to get paid huge amounts of, Steve Zalian used to get paid a million for Arnie's zingers, you know, "I'll be back," you can't put me in the cooler. You know, all those, you know, hasta la vista. Consider that a divorce. People were paid large amounts of money. Well, essentially, it's a trailer of zingers. And then Gerard Butler doing the, I'm going to kill everyone now. Now,
is a zinger just a pithy one-liner catchphrase?
Yeah, it was a phrase that had terminology in Hollywood in the 90s when literally people got paid like £1 million for writing zingers, not script. You get sent the script and they say, give us 6 zingers. And
so on Crime Watch, when they say don't have nightmares, is that a zinger?
That's a zinger, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I bet somebody didn't get paid £1 million. So, firstly, obvious, it's unbelievably stupid. Secondly, it's unbelievably, blimey, I've seen all this before. I mean, it is Saw meets Death Wish meets Silence of the Lambs. It has an essential plot hole, and I know talking about it in terms of plot is really probably doing it, you know, a disservice because it's not really a plot-heavy movie. But the problem is this: the beginning of the film, he's a decent, law-abiding citizen. Okay, bad stuff happens to him. The bad stuff happening to him turns him into the bloke from Saw. Okay, wreaking his vengeance. At which point, it kind of turns out that in fact, rather than being a decent, law-abiding citizen, he is an incredibly obsessive criminal mastermind with a penchant for really, really elaborate ways of getting his own. But he is basically the guy out of Saw who, if you remember from Saw, has spent years of his life becoming the twisted character, you know, the Jigsaw character. So you have it both ways. On the one hand, decent, ordinary person. On the other hand, Hannibal Lecter from within the cell. Okay, so it makes no sense. Secondly, Jamie Foxx, what's he doing in this film? I mean, it's one of those things in which you think, I'm really kind of slightly wondering about how your agent pitched this to you. Is that you're going to be playing second fiddle to the Gerard Butler character, and basically your role is that you are the embodiment of all things that are namby-pamby about the law. You know, hideous murders get committed. Oh, yeah, but you know what? We struck a deal. So, obviously, the only way to it is that somebody will have to go to incredibly weird lengths to get their own back, and basically they will be morally right, and there will be some kind of reconciliation at the end in which the moral compass is still. But you will learn a bit. That's your role. You're second fiddle to the guy who stood around in oil in his pants in This Is Sparta. And doing that, but he's doing it in modern day and with more tools. Thirdly, the level of sadism is pretty high. I mean, you'd have to be kind of genuinely, but incredibly naive not to believe that the pleasure of the film is in people watching, you know, horrible things happen to, in inverted commas, horrible characters. Once again, I mean, the BBFC, the film contains a vigilante theme with a man taking the concept of justice into his own hands, using violence against those he feels have failed him. In this instance, there is some ambiguity to how the vigilante's presence is presented, with some dialogue references to the lack of wisdom of his choices, some dialogue references to the lack of wisdom, but this is counterbalanced with him being presented as a sympathetic character. So essentially, you know, on a you know, exploitation moral level, it is you're completely with him. Legal system has failed everybody. We're going to do all these really nasty things. And in the scene in which the guy applies the power tools to all the people, the audience is behind him going, yes, 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 disemboweling, yes, do all the stuff, blah, blah, blah. So, reprehensible, but I have nothing against films being reprehensible. The problem, apart from it being stupid and it making no sense and it basically being a tick box of every other one of those exploitation movies that you made, is that in the end you sit there going, oh, it's not as good as the trailer. It's a shame. I wanted it to be like Crank, you know, in which you think this is just bonkers. But the problem is, it kind of takes itself more seriously than it, because it's got somebody like Jamie Foxx. You're leaning forward. Do you want me to stop?
Yes.
Fine. Okay. So, no.
No what?
No.
No what?
No. Yeah, yes, you want me to
don't
stop?
Don't go and see it?
Not really.
Okay. Jason, Stephen, Fairport, Michael and David, hello.
Hello.
I just wonder if we could squeeze in a nativity. Can we do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we can,
just,
yeah.
Just before, because I've seen the trailer, hated the trailer.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, just deeply irritated.
All right. Well, so as you know, we haven't got time for a clip, but,
no.
But the story is that Martin Freeman is working in a primary school. He is told that he has to put on the nativity play. It turns out that his girlfriend has gone to Los Angeles. She's apparently a movie producer. He's got a rivalry with another school, which always put on the nativity play, get 5 stars in the local newspaper, whereas his production, last production, got no stars. He says in an offhand way to somebody, oh, I'm going to get my girlfriend producer to come over and watch the nativity. So this gets out into the press. Next thing you know, he's being fated as the local hero who's going to put on the definitive nativity, and the Hollywood is going to come and see it and turn everybody into movie stars. Of course, this isn't happening, blah, 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 blah. I have heard some bad things. I didn't see film 2009, but apparently Jonathan Ross didn't like it at all, and you said you've seen the trailer and your toes curled. You know what? It's it's perfectly fine. It's directed by the person who made Confetti. It's done in that kind of broadly, it's improvised. You know, they improvise while they're on set. They know what they're doing, but they improvise on set. And actually, there are several moments in it which are perfectly fine. There's a very young cast, some professional and some not professional. Some of the charming moments are essentially, you know, kids up on stage doing funny little things, which is funny. It's a youth certificate movie. It's clearly aimed at a family audience. One point when I was watching it, I thought, if this was an American film, would people be being kinder to it? Is there some just kind of sheen of, you know, dismay that happens whenever you see something with a British setting? And to be honest with you, I didn't not enjoy it. I kind of, there were bits of it.
It's not quite the same as I enjoyed it.
No, there are bits of it that I enjoyed. It goes mad when it goes to Hollywood, and it feels the need to end much too big, and the ending, the last third of it is all over the shop. But for two thirds of it, it was perfectly fine. I smiled. I did have a tear in my eye at one point. I loved the little kids in it. I thought they were fine. I have got no problem with taking my kids to see it. You know what? Everybody else should just get a grip.
And of the movies that we have seen, and you have mentioned...
Well, Paranormal Activity is the film of the week. But it didn't scare me.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
If that podcast wasn't enough, visit my Uncut blog at www.bbc.co.uk/markkermode for video reviews, anecdotes, and the chance to let me know your opinions.